Hi, everybody. This is Mike, and welcome to the fourth episode of Feedback and Forth. An amazing thing happens on today's episode. We stayed on subject. The subject for today is what was our first concert or concerts, as well as what was the first major big concert that had a huge impact on our lives. So that's what's going on today. Hope you stick around and enjoy the episode.
Dig on in your flower bed.
Hi, baby, this is the Wolfman coming at you, and I'm here to tell you I just wanted you to listen to a little podcast. Couple of friends of mine, they're two sweethearts, Scott and Mike, and they got this show called Feedback and Forth, baby. Yeah, Wolfman, gonna listen. How about you? Ow!
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Feedback and Forth. This is episode 4. I don't know how many episodes we have to do before I stop saying what number it is, but right now it's only 4. So, as always, I'm Scott.
And I'm Mike.
And we are here to entertain you. Actually, if you are just coming into this, I just thought I'd give you a quick rundown. Anybody who hasn't caught the previous episodes. Mike and I are musicians. We used to be in a band together with our friend Tony. And the band was called Tall Toad. And we were from a small town in the Pacific Northwest. And we're primarily playing during what most people would probably think of as the grunge explosion or the Seattle music explosion. And we thought it might be interesting to other musicians and hopefully other people to just tell some stories about what it was like to be in a band back then during those times. It's pretty exciting. And also talk a little bit about what it was like to be a band from a very, very small town that nobody had ever heard of and trying to, you know, play with the big dogs or whatever. So
yes, it was a tinier town than the tiny town in Footloose.
That's right. Looked like a metropolis compared to Yelm, Washington. I think that's every episode now I've said the name of the town. So, but yeah, please come along for the ride with us as we relive mostly failure, but a lot of good times as well.
Yes.
So last episode, if you didn't catch that one, we had Tony here. Tony doesn't live in the area anymore and hasn't for a long time, but it was great that we had the whole band back together. So if you haven't checked out episode 3, stop this episode now and go back. Listen to that. And if you don't care, then, yeah, we'll just get going with this one.
Yeah.
So, Mike, we're getting over the holiday ridiculousness and trying to find our minds again. So,
yes,
hopefully this will get a little more flowing in a minute. Primarily, I think I said primarily already. Once.
For anybody keeping score.
Right. We grew up in, well, I grew up in Yelm in the 70s and 80s. Mike moved there.
I moved there in 1980. I used to live, it started out at Lake Taps, which became, you know, because it's by a lake, eventually became lots of, you know, bigger houses and
right,
all that. And we were the tiny. So many times have tiny been
right
mentioned.
Really tiny.
And then after my parents divorced, my dad stayed there, and my mom and my sister and I moved down to Sumner. As I'm doing all these hand gestures.
I know, we always do this things no one can see.
And I only say down to Sumner from there because, you know, we were higher up.
Down a literal hill.
Exactly.
To Sumner.
So
you weren't from any big city before you came to Yelm. So, okay.
Yeah, and then when my mom remarried, we moved out to Yelm.
beautiful yum. So,
wow, there's nothing to do here.
Exactly, which I think is partly what all this is you could subtitle these podcasts, I think, The Making of an American Rock Band. It's trying to figure out what motivates a kid to want to play music and be in a band. And I think the thing Mike just said, a big motivator is not having anything else to do. So
yes,
you're into music and you're bored and you got, you know, you hit those teenage years and the hormones are pumping and you got to do something. And, you know, you can't even turn to crime really because the town's too little.
Yeah. So everybody knows each other.
Right. So you can't, you know, violence and crime and all that kind of stuff. So you're just full of all this crazy energy and picking up an instrument and learn how to play is one way to beat the boredom. Also, we're in the Northwest and it's raining.
I was just going to mention, I think somebody, we'll say some famous rock star had said.
Yes.
In fact, I think it might have been Chris Cornell. Because somebody had asked me, like, you know, what do you do in the Pacific Northwest when, yeah, you know, there's no big music scene, you know, no big nothing.
Right.
Well, yeah, you start playing in a band, and since it rains so much, it's like you're always just playing inside
right.
the house.
Just in the basement. Yeah, the garage.
Basement.
That's very true. I mean, that was a big part of why I did it as well. And I think that was Chris Cornell. I remember. I think I read that interview. Something you said triggered something, and then it flew away.
It's trivia night, too. Like, you were going to ask. You know, like, we have a studio audience. You're going to ask the studio audience.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about. That's a big edit there, I bet. Damn,
we
really did have something. You said something that made me think of something. Okay. One of the things I wanted to talk about, or what I thought we'd start with, is your memories of the first time you saw a live band. Because I went from being a kid that loved music and was just super getting into rock and roll in a big way. So I went from being a rabid music listener to seeing a live band and almost immediately wanting to do that. And I don't know. I have a couple of memories of bands, and these weren't big famous bands. These were just what I guess you'd call dudes playing music live.
Well, God, I know we talked about this before the show.
You're dragging this out of you.
And I wasn't going to mention this, even though I told Scott. I wouldn't say that they were influential. Okay, so we used to... God, how many times can I go, we used to go to like these fairs, you know.
Right.
You did too.
Yeah.
Like around the, I guess, western part of Washington.
Sure.
And I think it was primarily, because I don't think they ever played at the Puyallup Fair. There was a band called The Shop.
The Shop.
I had to pop my P, because it's two P's with an E at the end.
I don't know if this episode's going to end up being used or not, but... The Shop.
Yeah,
so PPE Shop.
Yes. Man. They played all country covers, mainly from like the 70s and 80s. And this was the 80s.
So you told me that earlier, and I feel like The Shop, spelled S-H-O-P-P-E, is not a good... That doesn't make me think of country music.
No.
Makes me think of England or something.
Yeah, or France.
Yeah. That's weird.
No.
So you guys should have picked a better name. Sorry.
You know, it's like I said, they weren't influential. I mean, it was just glad to see music.
Right.
But But yeah, I saw them quite a few times. I think my stepdad liked them. And I think my mom.
I didn't realize this was a more than one time thing.
No,
okay.
what would you call followers of the shop? Shoppers.
Shoppers. Oh, man. Wow.
So yeah, I think. I mean, the band that did influence me to actually play.
Right.
And I've told you this story before.
Ah, okay.
It was in 1984.
Ooh.
I went, and this was a big concert in Seattle.
Okay.
No, this is the actual, I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, it was actually at the Coliseum, which is now the arena.
Yes.
And I happened to go see with Shane Anderson.
Okay.
And his brother, Marty.
Marty. Shout out to Shane and Marty.
Yeah, that's right. And somebody else went, I want to say like Kenny Roberts or if it wasn't,
okay.
I don't remember who you were, I apologize.
Right.
But his parents, Shane and Marty's parents drove us down to Seattle.
Okay.
To go see the show. And it was Iron Maiden.
Oh, man.
On the Power Slave tour.
Damn it. I missed this tour.
With Twisted Sister opening.
Yes. You mean Twisted fucking Sister.
Where can they print that?
I can't print that.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, I knew who they were, obviously, because they had two albums that I had listened to prior.
Yeah.
And then two before that that I didn't know about quite as much.
Right.
And that's the show that made me go, fuck.
Ah, man. Yeah, that's a hell of an opener, dude.
That is.
That was the show everybody went to except me, I remember.
Oh, that's right, because I think we ran into Tony there.
Yeah, Tony went, Dan.
Yes.
Probably Fred. And I didn't go. It was a little early for me still to break out from under my parents' thumb and be going to shows, you know. Yes. I didn't have cool parents like Shane, Marty.
I know. Man, so. Travis. I'm sure, you know, they went and, you know, parked somewhere or went to a bar.
Right.
Drank.
Parenting in the 80s.
But yeah, that was the big show for me.
Man. Well, I will talk about my first big arena show, but I feel like that's a long story. So, but the reason I thought of this was because I was thinking of the very first time I saw people with instruments playing rock music live in front of me. And this would have been in eighth grade. We used to have I think it was the last Friday of every month or something like that. It was like a free, the second half of the day was like a free period where they'd have different things you could do, entertaining type things. I think maybe in one room they'd show a movie and another room, I don't know, you know, whatever, entertaining crap that wasn't school. And there was usually a dance, and it went by homeroom or something to determine who was putting on the dance. And one particular Friday was at our homeroom, and someone, I don't remember who it was, one of the kids in my class said that their uncle or somebody had a band, and they were like, what if we had a live band for the dance? And everybody got really excited about that idea.
Uh-huh.
And so they made it happen. And I'm cutting this story way down because there was some personal trauma involved with this story that I'm not prepared to disclose. But
were there terrorists and you had to take them out?
No, it was worse than that. It was girl troubles.
Girl trouble. That's shout out to
first
girl
band
trouble.
I saw was girl trouble. I wish it was girl trouble. Anyway, so I didn't go to dances. I was not a going to dances kind of kid. But I was, so this would have been 82-3, we determined, I think, when we were talking about the Kiss cards. So,
oh, yes.
1983, probably.
Yeah, yeah, because it was right before high school.
Right, 83, 84. Okay, so this was, 1983. And I was maybe 2 years into discovering hard rock and kind of starting to figure out what was going on and what I liked. So I was by 83, I was pretty well listening to Iron Maiden and stuff like that, Ozzy and all that stuff. So I was, the idea of seeing a real band play was very attractive enough that I went to a dance, even though I was just a huge dork and never went to dances. And I went to this dance, and it was in the old boys gym at the middle school.
So it was in this great place to go.
Yeah. It was in this giant old wooden building. Literally like every single thing on it was made out of wood, I think. Great acoustics. And I climbed up the bleachers as high as you could go up by those little tiny windows way up in the air.
Oh, and we have to really quick. This gym, there was a floor where they played basketball.
Yeah.
And then the bleachers were actually up off the floor.
Right, like built up wooden.
Yeah.
There was like walls and then the bleachers behind the walls that went up.
Yeah, so it was perfect. You could actually, he had a big band play there.
Right.
You could always have like people on the floor, but then people in the bleachers could easily see the band.
Yeah, it was great. It was, it would have been a great venue actually.
Yeah,
for shows.
I always thought that. Every time I'd go there for something, I'd be like, man, this is.
Yeah, it was nice.
Concert
it was really cool. And, unfortunately, I only saw this band. I can't trash them really because I don't remember their name. So, and I'm sure that memory for them is probably way gone as well. But like, ooh, eighth grade dance at the middle school? Yes, we'll take that gig. We would have.
Maybe too. They're doing a podcast about it.
Perhaps. Hey, if you're out there and you remember playing Yale Middle School in 1983, let us know. Anyway, I went to see this band and it was somebody's uncle. So they were clearly, in my mind right now, they're middle-aged. They might have been like 30 because in eighth grade, 30 would have seemed old. I do remember at least one of them was wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And it was your basic guitar, drums, bass, keyboard combo. And they played the hits of the day. And
you don't remember the name of the band?
I don't remember the name of the band. But, they were competent. They played... here's the songs I remember that they played. Baby's on Fire by Sammy Hagar, who I seem to mention
really?
A lot. Yeah. I don't know why, but once again, Sammy Hagar, they played Baby's on Fire because I liked that song. And they played Mr. Roboto by Styx.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think that was a hit. Yeah. I remember it being a little more raw than the, the record version. But.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure that was a hit in 83 or maybe 82. It was a pretty recent hit, Mr. Roboto. And they played a Foreigner song, but I don't remember which song, but I remember they played a Foreigner song.
It wasn't Hot-Blooded?
Man, it might have been Hot-Blooded, actually.
There's that. What is it? Waiting for You?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It wasn't. It wasn't a ballad, although they did do some ballads because I remember.
Of course,
got a slow dance. So yeah, I just sat up in the bleachers and watched, and some kids were dancing, and I think people were into it and stuff, and they had a little disco ball and the whole thing. But that was the first time that I really remember, even though it was just like probably a bar band. I remember just thinking it was really cool and I wanted more than ever to play guitar. I think I just vaguely thought about ever being a musician at that point. But once I saw people standing there playing guitar, I really, really started to want to play guitar. So,
wow. So the Untitled band really,
they made an impact. Plus, they played Sammy Hagar. So,
well, and I know that we had also talked about two other bands that ended up coming through Yelm for some. It's like bands that played like high school,
assemblies. Yeah, or some sort of weird assembly, which kind of blows my mind that they would do that for us. I don't.
Yeah, for people actually playing their own instruments.
Yeah. So this was fast forward a couple years into high school. Also in the gym.
Yep.
Not as cool of a gym, but
no, that was the the girls' gym,
right?
Because that's where all like the main girls' lockers were in the
yeah.
Boys were in the old one,
right?
It was a much bigger gymnasium,
right? That's true.
But yeah, they.
So we were not entirely youth. You thought their name was Freeway Jam,
yes.
Which, and I, but that triggered in my memory that I thought their name was Freedom Jam, but I think Freeway Jam is a way better name. So I think we should call them Freeway Jam.
Okay.
But yeah, and they also played covers.
Yeah, they had spandex.
They did. They looked like a rock band.
They looked kind of like Rail.
They did.
Except for, you know, no fur boots on the singer's feet.
Right. And like, some of these references, please check the website because Mike is diligently we go through all these references that we know none of you know what the hell we're talking about and explain them later. So Rail, though, real quick, was one of the first hard rock bands out of Seattle to get any kind of fame.
Yeah.
But mainly they were famous because the singer wore these really furry boots. And he just got teased mercilessly about it. But anyway, so back to Freeway Jam. Yeah, I do remember they had the look down, the sort of early 80s hard rock before that it was like.
Yeah, I remember they did some AC/DC covers.
Yeah, I think they did like Van Halen.
Probably.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I remember the guitarist had like it was like a BC Rich or something, one of those oddly shaped, and it was really red. I just remember it was like super red.
So he was ahead of his time, really.
He was, yeah.
That was more like the mid-80s.
Yeah, yeah. I had never seen a guitar like that before, I don't think. And yeah, the school put on a rock concert for us.
It's crazy.
And I thought it was cool. I thought they were cool. It made me want to play again.
Yep.
The guy did a David Lee Roth off the top of his amp, I remember. Did the splits.
Man.
Did the air splits.
See, that's rock and roll right there.
So this was a step up from the middle school dance band.
I bet, you know, he did have the butt of his pants there, though.
Yeah, I don't think you could
unlike
do that
David Lee Roth, right?
In a school. Yeah. Probably would have probably got in trouble. So, yeah, that was my second live band, and I still hadn't gone to a big concert yet. So you were probably either the same year or getting close to going to Iron Maiden around that time.
Yeah, because I think it was, I want to say, yeah, because it was my freshman year of high school when we saw, because I think they came through twice.
Wow.
I want to say I kind of vaguely remember like a second time, like, oh, these guys.
Saw them.
But yeah, it was right, you know, I think Maiden was in December, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So, wow. Yeah, okay. This is probably around fall time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were big.
And then my next live band, you said you didn't remember. So I won't dwell on this too long, but again, in high school, but not a real, this time for some reason, I don't know why, somebody booked a band to play in the cafeteria at lunchtime at school, which again, good gig. I hope they got paid a lot. Plus they were from Seattle, so they had to come all the way from Seattle to
play. They probably got like cafeteria food. One meal each.
Lucky guys. But there was a band called The Machine, and they played at lunchtime, and I don't know why, but they were a real band, and they were announced as, you know, from Seattle. the hard rock stylings of the Machine. I don't know how they were introduced.
Do you remember what year this was?
This would have been, I want to say, probably sophomore year, or like late sophomore, the second half of sophomore year. It could have been early junior year, I think. Because I was trying to remember if Dan and I had been hanging out yet, and I feel like we just kind of were, because I kind of remember talking to him about that band. So, and again, things none of you know these references to, but our friend Dan, Mike and I started our very first band with our friend Dan, and he's gonna probably get a whole episode at some point, but yeah, so I remember seeing this band, The Machine, and I was trying to describe them earlier, and in my memory, they're sort of a combination of like a new wave glam hard rock band, sort of like I don't know, like Hanoi Rocks or something like that. Not quite metal,
right?
But not quite new wave, but not quite pop. I don't know. They were an interesting, weird band. But I remember they were fairly loud, and I remember the guy, the guitarist, played a Les Paul, and I remember drooling over his Les Paul. And they were cheesy, you know. I think the singer was doing some creepy, like, hey, girls, you know, kind of shit. Which,
no, he's like 26, 27.
Hey, ladies. 14? Yeah, so... Which at the time I didn't think about, but the more I think about it now, I'm like, yeah,
creepy.
But, and I don't think any of the girls were having it either. I don't remember anybody being super impressed.
No, I think everybody was just glad to be out of class for an hour.
But again, just seeing a band, and this being something about that band in particular, I think because... The first band I saw was just some guys playing a high school, middle school dance. Mm-hmm. The second band, the Freeway Jam.
The Freeway Jam.
Those guys, even though they weren't a big, huge, famous band, their presentation kind of was as if they were.
Right. They were in their minds.
Yeah.
They were like, we're huge, right, man.
They were kind of using the Gene and Paul mindset, I think, a little bit. Like, if we act like we're huge, you know, we will be. But then this band, the Machine, they were just a rock band, that like a working rock band. You could tell, even if I wasn't super into the music. And they played originals, actually. That was the other thing. So I was like, oh, wow, okay, they're playing their own songs, you know. That was the first time I'd seen a band play original material. Yeah, so... Even though musically I wasn't super impressed, it was still like, it made me, again, really want to play and be like, man, that's super cool. But should I tell my first arena story?
Yes. Okay. I think you should.
Okay. Although it's lengthy, so maybe we could break it up somehow. I wish we'd have done a Dio cover, and then we could play a Dio song in there.
Yeah, to everybody, we usually, you know, we'll pick a song or two to play, and then we'll put it in something, we'll segue into it.
Try to have some context.
But we...
we couldn't think of
no
anything.
Fucking idea.
We're struggling with this one, so it may just be some random song.
Yeah, then we can talk about the song, and then Scott can tell us the big story of his first big concert.
There you go.
Go ahead.
Yeah. one yet.
Well, that was Best One Yet from our first recordings, our first album, Wally. And that's a Black Flag cover. And we chose that because we had no other choice, really. We were going through all our music, trying to find anything that would relate to what we're talking about in this episode. And guess what?
Nothing. No Maiden covers.
Nothing. No, no Sammy Hagar.
No Freeway Jam covers. No, the machine.
No Shoppe. But we did cover that, and that song was originally recorded in the 80s, and we're talking about the 80s right now. So
there you go.
If you don't like it, too bad. Yes. So we're talking about our first live music experiences, and Mike has already related that his first big concert was
Iron Maiden.
And
I was slave to a...
And Twisted F fucking Sister.
Whoops.
Depending on whose company you're in. And, yeah, I didn't get to go to that because I was still fighting with my father, who was a preacher, and my mother, who was married to a preacher. Not the biggest heavy metal fans in the world.
No, and your parents were not.
No. And I lived... If Yelm was a tiny town, living outside of Yelm, out in the hills, that is like being a million miles away from anywhere. And when you don't have a car, it's really hard to sneak out of the house and go do stuff.
Yeah, because it's... Because I used to walk sometimes down into town from where I lived.
Yeah.
And it was easily a 45-minute walk.
Jeez. Yeah, and I was further out than you.
Yeah, so you would probably be at least an hour.
Yeah, it would have been really hard for me to get out of the house and go do things like that at that point. So that was 1984.
Yes.
And so I want to hear more about Iron Maiden, but I'll briefly talk about my first when I did finally bust out and get to go to a big concert. For me, that would have been New Year's Eve, 85, ooh, turning into 86 because it was New Year's Eve. And I went to see the man, the legend, Ronnie James Dio. That was so Dio. And for years, I was under the impression I had seen the Last in Line tour.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it was the Sacred Heart tour, if that makes any difference to anybody.
Which would make sense
because
of the things you're about right to tell us about
right
that I've heard before.
And makes me feel even stupider that I didn't realize that.
Well, you know, he had more money from the record company for that tour.
Dio was doing good in 85. Riding high, playing the Coliseum. Again, Coliseum. Yep. I'm going to call it the Coliseum. I don't care what it's called now.
Yeah.
It's always going to be the Seattle Coliseum to me.
Yeah, which is, I just want to say, which is weird because across the street was the Seattle Center Arena.
Yeah, that used to be the arena.
Yeah, and then the Coliseum became
the arena.
An arena.
And I don't know what happened to that other arena.
But yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, that's fine. Be a lot of interrupting. So yeah, I got talked into going to see Dio with Dan, who we previously mentioned, who I was good friends with at this point. And Dan's older brother... One of his older brothers, the one that lived at home, who we will be mentioning a lot. Fred.
Yes.
So I went with Dan and Fred. I didn't know Fred that well yet. I knew who he was and I'd met him, but I hadn't really hung out with him yet.
And was he scraggly?
He was.
Too?
Fred, okay. Just to give you guys a picture Lemmy and then shrink him by about a foot and a half and take away some of his hair, but leave the rest long and give him a scragglier beard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's perfect. Man, you got Fred down.
That's Fred. And man, we love that guy. So yeah, I went, my first show, I was going to Seattle with Dan and Fred in Dan's Chevette.
The Chevette.
And, I'll give you the beginning and then maybe I'll throw it back to you and we'll go back and forth on these. Otherwise, this will be a long story. So I went over to Dan's house, and we got in the Chevette. And Dan also lived pretty much in the country, just a different section. And we pulled out of the driveway, and probably hadn't gone even half a mile when he pulled off on a dirt road that went off into the woods. And we drove out a little ways into the woods and pulled over, and Fred pulled out this big red bong, which was the first bong that I'd ever been around. I'd been around the pot, but it was always a pipe or a joint.
Yeah.
Never seen a bong yet. So Fred pulls out a big red bong, which later we would become very familiar with. And it was named Red Eye. It was Red Eye. So we hadn't gone a half a mile from the house before Dan and Fred just load up, get baked out of their minds. And I was still, you know, I was very timid and tenuous about everything still. So I was just like, maybe a little, you know. So we did that, and we got back on the road, headed out. And we're going the back way through, again, Washington people will know. Not all Washington people.
Yeah.
Pierce County people will know. We were going through Fort Lewis, the back ways, into Spanaway, and then we were going to go from Spanaway to I-5, get on I-5, go to Seattle. So we hit Spanaway, and we pull over again at a store with a sign that said hardware and liquor. Good combination.
Wow, really?
Yes. I think that store's still there. Too. Hardware/liquor
hardware
store.
And liquor.
Hardware and liquor. And we pulled over, and Fred got out. Here's the huge advantage of hanging out with Fred was he was like 26 or something at the time.
Old enough to buy alcohol.
Old enough to buy alcohol. So Fred goes in the hardware liquor store, comes out with 2 pints of Jack Daniels and a shovel. No, he didn't bring a shovel. But he had 2 pints of Jack Daniels. And we get back in the car, get going. We get on I-5. And we're rocking out to whatever cassette is jamming in the Chevette radio, stereo. And I remember at one point looking over. We're on I-5 going past, or I think we're in Fife at this point. I remember looking over, and the car next to us are a bunch of other rockers obviously going to Dio as well. And they like hold up a bong, and then Fred holds up the bong. And it was like this bonding moment of like, yeah, we're partying. Gonna go see fucking Dio, man. You know, throw the horns and
I
all
bet
that
everybody
shit.
Was banging their heads.
Banging the heads. Oh man. Yeah. So it was a party even before we got there. And, so we got to Seattle, find a parking garage. Find a parking spot. Bong comes out again. Or actually, I think, no, Dan was switching over the pipe at that point.
Just to be cautious.
Right, you know. So they pull out the pipe, pull out one of the bottles of Jack Daniels, start slugging Jack. And Dan, this will lead into something else later, but Dan pulls out a candy bar out of his... out of his pocket. It's like a Hershey bar, and it's all melted, and he eats it anyway. And they're slugging Jack, and I'm good. And so we go over to the Coliseum, and so this is January 31st. It's cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wearing, just to set the rocker stage, I'm wearing my usual jeans that are full of holes, and I'm wearing my KISW Seattle's Best Rock.
I know. I wish we could actually show you the logo. Man. It was great.
It was so cool. Rock looks like it's written in lava or something.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So I'm wearing that, except it wasn't strictly the radio station shirt. I think it was their hydroplane.
Shirt. Yes, from what's called Seafair.
Yes, when they raced the hydros, which is big in Seattle. I don't remember the name of their boat, but I think it was so it was the KISW. So it did have the logo.
I want to say it was something like the Miss Rock or something like
that. Yes, it was. Wow, that seems like so that. Easy to remember. Seattle's best Miss Rock. Yeah, I think you're right. So, and I'm just going to mention Chip Hanauer for all our Northwest listeners from back in the day. and the Squire Shop.
We'll be doing a podcast just about seafaring.
We're just going to say random words. So anyway, yeah, so I'm wearing the t-shirt, but I, of course, had ripped the sleeves out. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but I had ripped it a little on the collar down the front. So it was kind of flapping down to where the
Look
Rock logo was. Yeah, just to be unique. And then on top of that, wearing the old denim.
The denim
with the sleeves already cut out. So I'm standing in line on New Year's Eve in the freezing fucking cold weather, basically with a little bit of denim just barely covering me because that t-shirt was super thin.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many holes in my pants. So I'm fucking freezing, and we're standing in the line, and Fred keeps turning around and like sticking the bottle of Jack under my nose and be like, it'll warm you up. Warm you up. You know, so he did talk like a weird, like a 80-year-old man sometimes.
He did.
So finally, I was like, all right, maybe he's right. So I took the bottle, Jack, did a little slug, burned, going down. And yeah, so the line went all the way around the Coliseum, around the Seattle Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember being, I was so overwhelmed. I'd never been in I haven't even got inside yet, but I'm just overwhelmed by the line of like, it's all these like heavy metal people and like rocker chicks. And like, some of them are wearing, you know, like
almost nothing.
Yeah. Like rocker chick stuff. And I'm, how old am I? 15, I guess, or something. I'm just like, wow.
So now, was this before the, like the metal detectors that they had to start doing?
Yeah, it was pat down. Well, they had a walkthrough metal detector, but they didn't have the handhelds.
Okay.
And then they had the pat through and you could choose your line.
So I was trying to remember if this was post Judas Priest, the stabbing.
I think this was before.
Okay.
I think it was before. Yeah, because I do remember, because again, Fred, mm-hmm. when we got up to go in, he still had a bottle of Jack. And so, you know, it's a pint bottle, so it's kind of the flat ones. So he shoved it down the front of his pants. And we always went, this was my first time, but Dan was already a veteran. Fred, knows how many.
Go through the pat.
Yeah, you always go through the pat down so you can get your pipe and shit through.
But no, wait. Okay, I have to ask
yes.
before you get to the meat of the story. Yes. Why didn't Fred go through the metal detector? I'm just going to put that out. You can answer that when you tell the story.
Okay, well, I can answer that right now. I don't know. Because it was Fred. Who knows? I don't know. Yeah, we all went through the pat down, and Fred should have gone through the metal detector line,
mm-hmm.
but for whatever reason, he didn't. Yeah, so it took a long time. I just remember at one point people were chanting, "Open the fucking doors! Open the fucking doors!"
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, "Wow, this is crazy! It's a riot!" I was so naive. Yeah, I really was just like goggle-eyed, like, "Whoa, this is crazy!" Yeah, so we got up to go in. I followed Dan through the pat down line. Dan got in fine. He always put his pipe in his shoe.
Yep. If you put it right kind of in right between the big toe and
yep. Yeah. For all those. Well, it's not even, I don't know if you, they probably give it to you going in nowadays.
Like,
here's your weed.
All right. Complimentary weed for you for enjoy the show.
But we had to sneak it in, kids. So, yeah, so I followed Dan through the pat down. For whatever reason, Fred came through behind me through the pat down line, and the guy stopped him. And he's like, "What's that in your pants?" Fred goes, what? What? He turned into Vinnie Barbarino all of a sudden.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that, I mean, he had nothing to say. The guy was like, the thing in your pants, you know? And Fred's just like, what? You know? Yeah, so I don't know how long that took, but eventually he wore him down and they took Fred's bottle away. And then he came in and we entered the Coliseum. And I'll stop there and I'll throw it back to you for the Iron Maiden experience.
All right. Well, let's see. The ride down wasn't eventful, or, you know, because.
Did you go with the parents again or?
For Iron Maiden.
Oh, yeah. You said they.
Yeah. Yeah. Shane and Marty's mom cool. And stepdad.
The cool parents.
Yeah, they, I mean, we didn't, I don't think we smoked any weed on the way down because they, you know, they knew at some point that, oh, their kids are going to smoke because they smoked weed. But yeah, I know we had some because we ended up smoking out at some point. Just because, you know, it was Shane and Marty.
Right. They always had it.
Yeah, so you get in, not actually getting, you get in the line. Yeah, it's like always these long lines to get in. And yeah, it's December, and I think all I was wearing was.
Oh, it was December for you too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I had like a longer sleeve, like maybe a baseball jersey.
Oh, right.
Because remember, I bought a baseball jersey there.
Yeah, that's another story.
Yeah, and that meant a horrible end. We will probably talk about it at some point.
Yes.
But yeah, I remember getting in there. And yeah, I think maybe people were just kind of like, come on, I'm fucking open.
Right.
It's like everybody just wanted
rowdy
to get in.
Rockers. Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, because this was before even metal detectors. It's
wow.
Like they had people doing pat down, but they would, you know, call you out of the line, I think.
Oh, wow.
Which is weird. I'm like,
that is weird.
It's a fucking metal concert.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like everybody's got something on.
Right.
Them,
you know? Spikes, chains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get in. And I just remember it's like, you know, and it's only like not even down on the floor yet. It's like
right.
You get in, you know, there's all the, you know,
the
people selling,
yeah,
T-shirts and, you know, records. And it's just, but suddenly it's just like this waft of pot smoke. It's just kind of like, whoa, all right.
Welcome.
And this was also before reserved seating.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like we just walked down onto the floor.
General admission. Yeah.
We were just standing around waiting for the show to start.
Those were the days.
Ran into people we knew. You know, saw Tony.
Because everyone was there except for me.
I want to say even Mark Tatum was there, but
damn it. He didn't even like Iron Maiden.
But yeah, so the opening act. Was this band, I don't know if any of the, you know, you younger kids will remember them at all. Your parents maybe listened to some of the music. It was a band called Twisted Sister.
Yes.
And they were glam in a way.
In a way, sure.
It's like, you know.
Their look was for sure.
Yeah, but they went, you know, not trying to, you know, look more feminine. They almost kind of went like the Tammy Faye Baker route, where
definitely.
They was like so much extreme.
Wow, that's a good
makeup.
80s reference. Yeah, they went, they were almost mocking it in a way by trying to be as ugly as possible or something. And it worked because they were ugly.
Yeah, and these hideous like color costumes.
Yeah, I don't even know what those were. I never understood that. I was like, are this supposed to be what women would wear? Because that's not what it looks like.
Yeah,
I never got that, but whatever.
And I was, you know, I was familiar with like their two or three hit songs that they had at the time, you know, because they were up and coming.
Right. Yeah, they had hits.
Yeah.
I wanna rock.
I mean,
rock.
I was definitely there to see Iron Maiden,
of course.
But yeah, so they, you know, like came out and they started doing their rock thing, and everybody's rocking out. But there were like some people, I think they were like throwing stuff at them. They're obviously Maiden fans. They're like,
right.
Oh, fuck these guys. Yeah. And I remember at some point, D. Snyder stopped the show.
Of course he did.
And he's just like, hey, you fucker, you throw that again and, blah, and I'm going to jump down there and kick your ass. And, you know, these people will probably catch me kind of thing. And I was just kind of like, I don't think they're going to catch you, dude. And I don't remember if he actually did at some point, but I swear to God that they threw something at them.
But yeah, I was just kind of like, wow,
that's hilarious.
You're going to jump down here. I'm like, man, you were not Angus Young.
No.
But
man,
yeah,
that's amazing.
So they, you know,
actually,
did their thing.
One band I've never saw live was Twisted Sister.
It was weird because they had their chain link fence.
Oh, right.
Like
from the streets.
Along the back, like in front of the amps or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, okay. And, you know, that's still more than, you know, than the Chopin.
At least they were trying.
Yeah. Or even,
some,
you know,
backdrop.
Freeway Freedom Jam.
Right.
I can't attest to the machine.
Yeah,
I can't remember if I saw them or not, if I just kind of blanked them out.
I don't know if they even had a backdrop. I think they were like the walls of the middle school cafeteria were their backdrop.
Maybe they had their logo.
They did have a little bit of lighting. They had a very, very small lighting rig. I do remember that.
They had like Frank the roadie guy.
Right. Could I get a blue spot on my solo? But, yeah, so, wow, you got to see the mighty Twisted Sister.
Yeah, they rocked, did their thing.
You know, I got to say, because I've been delving back in the last few years into bands that I was only semi into or maybe not into at all, in the most, especially in the heavy metal, and listening to old Twisted Sister, their first two albums are actually pretty good. They're like solid heavy metal. Then when they got to the one with the hits, it started to get a little, yeah, whatever. But and then after that, no thank you. But
yeah.
But I will. I'd stack those first two Twisted Sister records up there with any other probably metal released in 81, 82. Just saying. Just to defend them a little bit. But anyways.
But yeah, they... You know, they were cool enough, did their thing, even though I thought, oh, really?
Yeah.
Again, jumping. Would have kicked your ass.
Yeah, you can't fuck with a Maiden crowd.
No, you can't.
Ever. Like, from the beginning, I think, Maiden fans are crazy loyal fans.
Yeah, because I remember, yeah, like, people were, you know, clapping their hands before they came out.
Yeah.
Like, hey, come on.
Right.
Fucking get out here.
Right. And I'll just to divert this slightly, I'll just jump into... The next time we saw Iron Maiden, which I did get to go to, again, having to do with the opening band, it was the Vinnie Vincent Invasion.
Ooh.
And I remember kind of the same thing. Like, people were mostly just tolerating them.
Yeah.
Except for Tony.
Tony.
Who dropped his drawers and pretty much shot him the moon for, like, their whole set.
It was great. And
everybody
and
around us was
laughing. I swear to God
that
Vinnie had looked over... You know, at some point, and Tony did it. Yeah. So he probably...
I'm pretty sure.
The only one to ever BA Vinnie Vincent on that tour.
Yeah, it was great. But yeah, but just again, like, people don't want to see the opening act when you're at Iron Maiden.
No, because I'm pretty sure I remember that they started off... Because, yeah, the lights went down. And, you know, they had, like, I think no lights at all up. And then I think they started doing the Winston Churchill speech.
Right, because it was the Power Slave tour.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I want to say that they actually started off with, I think it was Aces High.
That sounds right.
Because, yeah, that was one of their more kind of just rocking.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's like suddenly it's like
everybody's
lights
crazy.
Went up.
Yeah. And you were on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was... how many rows of people? So
right.
People didn't stay in one spot.
Yeah, right. I know. Everybody's always, I was at front row at the concert. And I'm like, there aren't any rows. What are you talking about?
You
just cram in. Sometimes you're at the front and then you get pushed back.
Yeah.
Maybe that was a different era.
But I'm going to pass it back over to you because then I will finish up my story.
Okay. So, well, it was general admission still, but we were up in the stands for the opening bands. And the opening bands for the Dio show were the first band. So technically these guys get the honor of being the first real band I ever saw in a, you know, in a arena. It was a band called TKO. They were a Seattle rock band that I really didn't know much about at the time, except I knew that the bass player for this band Culprit, that I really liked, a metal, early 80s Seattle metal band, I knew that the bass player for Culprit was the bass player in TKO. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the singer, Brad Sinsel.
Sinsel, that's right.
I knew that he was some kind of local rock celebrity and had been in bands and stuff, but I really didn't know much about him. But I knew they were a Seattle rock band. I don't even know if I knew any of their songs at the time. I actually own two of their albums now. and they're good. They're good hard rock. But yeah, so they were the opening band, and probably because they were hometown, people seemed to be into it, you know? But before the music, we were sitting in the stands, and I think I mentioned previously that Dan had eaten a melted Hershey bar earlier in the evening consumed a bottle of whiskey on top of that. So before anything, also, I had the same experience when I walked in with the pot smoke.
Yeah.
I just remember the air was green.
Yeah.
It was just this green cloud hanging over. And just the amount of people just looking around and going, holy fuck, whoa. And then the first thing I saw on the other side of the Coliseum was a fist fight. Like these two guys just going at it. And so I just remember this cloud of pot smoke and two guys fighting on the other side and just going, whoa, this is crazy.
It's like Mad Max in here.
It was with all the leather and everything. So anyways, we're sitting there. We just found some seats and we're sitting there waiting for the show, and we hadn't been there 10 minutes probably. Dan starts puking. he pukes once. He's like, blah. Just leans over. He was a casual puker.
He was. Puking a few times.
He'd just do it and like lean back.
Get it back to my story.
So that's kind of what he did. But then we're like, well, we can't keep sitting here. So we moved.
Melted chocolate.
Yeah, it's all over. So we moved. We moved to some other seats. And the next, because there were two opening bands.
Oh, right.
The next.
Lucky you.
Yeah. Then I think the show was like $12 or something. The next act was, again, someone I knew who he was, but I really didn't know his music. Yngwie Malmsteen's Rising Force. So I got to see Yngwie do his thing, and I couldn't tell you anything about the songs or his band.
His ego.
I can tell you about that because that's all I remember is him and like standing on the edge of the stage front in front of everybody always and doing like crazy leads and then like flipping his guitar around. You can't see what I'm doing, but there's this thing that show-offy guitarists do where they flip their whole guitar around their body, you know, and catch it again and go back into the.
Yep.
So he did that like a million times. And so I'm kind of watching that and kind of watching Dan continue to heave out of the corner of my eye. and then that was over. So that was, you know, that was the opening act experience. Then we went down to the floor because now it's time for the big show. So we're down on the floor, and at some point really early on, I lost Dan, and I found out after the show that he had kind of crawled under the bleachers, under the low seats, and just sat in there and kept puking all night.
Oh man!
So I don't even know if he saw much of the show because I was too overwhelmed by the spectacle to really be aware of Dan. I don't know what Fred was doing. So Dio started. And as I mentioned, this was the Sacred Heart tour. So on the cover of that album is a dragon. And guess what else? On stage was a dragon. Giant ass dragon. And Dio came out, and that was, you know, I was into Dio. I liked Dio and the Sabbath albums he'd done. And he wasn't my favorite, but what the hell? You know, and he came out and rocked the place, but the things I remember about the Dio show were that fucking dragon, because it shot lasers out of its eyes. And Dio fought it with a sword that was like as big as him. It was like a 4-foot sword. Dio's like,
wow.
I don't know how tall Dio is. 4'11" He's really short. So he had this giant ass sword, and he's fighting a dragon that's shooting laser beams. And he had a crystal ball, a giant crystal ball that had a hologram of his own head in it. I think it sang a little or something.
Wow.
Yeah, that was weird. But and then, you know, lights and explosions. That was the first time I'd seen any of that shit. And I was blown away. I was amazed. And, you know, he played. He also, besides the Dio stuff, he played Heaven and Hell. And he played the Man on the Silver Mountain.
Of course.
It was, I was stoked for. And I remember at the end of Man on the Silver Mountain, it might have been the last. That might have been his like encore. I just remember him putting his foot up on the amp, you know, how you do and point.
Oh, yeah.
Put your foot on the amp and point at everybody. And the music stopped at the end. And he said, I'm the man. And you're the man. And you're the man. And he's like pointing at people. You're the man. You're the man. And you're the man.
I bet people were going crazy.
Yeah, because they were like, yeah, he pointed at me. I'm the man. And then he's like, we're all the man. And then the whole place goes up, you know, because he's like, fuck yeah, we're the man. And he's like, on the Silver Mountain. Like, everybody goes nuts. It was amazing. It was quite wonderful. I was blown away. It was like, heavy metal, rock and roll. I love it. It's my destiny. You know, it felt like Jack Black or something. And then the show was over, and I found Dan huddled under the the bleachers. But strangely, he was fine to drive home, and we went to a Jack in the Box drive through, and he ate a burger on the way home. So that was kind of amazing.
Because he's casual.
He was super casual. And yeah, that was my first concert experience. So we both had like a power metal kind of first, because you had Maiden, I had Dio.
I did.
Similar.
Yeah, and that
vibe.
Was also the first time, you know, I'd seen a show with, yeah, like extravagant, like, you know, backdrop. And
yeah, I remember seeing the pictures of that Maiden show and just going, whoa.
Yeah, because as soon as they, you know, hit the beginning of Aces High, it was like, you know, suddenly the lights were up and like all the backdrop was like a some kind of fabric, but like, you know, spray painted with, you know, Egyptian hieroglyphics,
right.
But they, you know, cover up like the amps,
yeah,
you know, because back then they had the wall of amplifiers. And yeah, like ramps for them to run up on, and
yeah,
like other parts of the stage.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know, stand
the ramps,
and,
yeah,
yeah, and you know, and they wore spandex.
These were the spandex days.
But yeah, I was just like, you know, holy fucking shit.
And Eddie did, they
yeah,
Eddie
that what song was it? Because I know at some point, yeah, they had to, because it was a Power Slave tour, they had to do the big, you know, Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Right.
And where, you know,
the 14-minute
yeah,
epic.
Even longer, you know, because it's live.
Yeah.
You know, they have to have their solos. But yeah, at some point, Eddie, because every show, yeah, Eddie comes out, and it was, and it's basically somebody on stilts.
Yeah.
Because he's like really tall, you know, he's like, you know, what, 9 feet tall,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, he just towers over everybody.
But he's, you know, dressed up as a mummy.
Yeah, nice.
You know, and that was the thing, is that they, you know, then they had, were kind of like, you know, fighting him a little bit, you know, kind of with their guitars. You know, he's flopping around and
sounds goofy, but if you were there,
it was amazing.
I love it.
But yeah, it was. I mean, that's, I watched, because I wanted to play music, but you
yeah,
know, I didn't have any instrument in mind. You know,
right.
Like, you know, like most people, I would, you know, lean towards the guitar.
Right.
But, you know, even, you know, fucking Steve Harris, one of the greatest bass players of all time.
Yeah,
yeah, he would do the Dio thing where, you know,
yeah,
put on the monitor and point his bass out in the crowd,
yep,
and playing it by his shoulder.
That. Yeah, that's the classic Steve Harris picture of him in that position.
Yeah, and it's like,
man,
you know, Adrian and Dave switching off the solos.
Yeah,
and
classic.
Nico
doing his thing.
Yep. Man. And then that singer guy.
That guy. He doesn't need any more publicity. Was he wearing those yellow pants? pictures I think I saw. Or no, he had.
I think he had like a leopard, like tight, sleeveless top. It wasn't like a tank top, but it had, he had like the sleeves kind of cut off. And I think he had like black.
Oh, like the spandex. Barney Rubble.
Yeah. I want to say.
I think I've seen a picture of that.
But yeah, that's what Bruce had, and that cool ass long hair.
Yep. Those both Bruce and Dio with the. They had the.
But yeah, it's like
opera style.
I'm pretty sure, like on the live album, you know, when he says, you know, scream for me, Long Beach.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that he did that for you. Yeah. Scream for me, Seattle.
Yeah.
Come on.
And did you scream?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just like, this is the greatest fucking thing ever. And that was $14 to go to see that show.
Oh, man. Wait, but that was before mine.
Exactly.
Wow.
They commanded a higher.
I guess so. Well, I might be wrong. It could have been. I don't really remember, but. That's amazing.
But yeah,
I like, wanted to see that show.
I just remember the show getting over, and I was on that, you know, kind of show high.
Your head's buzzing.
Yeah, it's like we were just like, oh, wow, man, that was fucking great. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. See that part where. Blah, blah, blah.
Yep. So to bring this all together to my original point, which I don't know if was made at the beginning, but all this leading to us wanting to play music, like, plenty of people are satisfied to listen to the records, go to the show, be like, that was a cool show, go to the next show, you know, and then not think about it. I went home thinking like, fuck, I want to play guitar.
Yeah.
I want to be in a rock band. I want to do that. I want to be on that stage, you know.
Well, yeah, suddenly you're renting, you know, back when people rented things.
Right.
rented, you know, videos of like bands live so you could watch them.
And, yeah.
Be like, oh man, that's, you know, rock like them,
right? And see, like, you know, get your moves.
I want to look like that.
The look, yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, how do you get your hair to look like that?
So yeah, it becomes an obsession.
Yeah, and I definitely, you know, just seeing those early bands, the low level bands, that got me thinking about it. Seeing my first big show, and being already had hooking up with Dan and talking about it. You know, we were. Mm-hmm. Both just like, okay, we got to get guitars.
Yeah.
We got to do this. And that's kind of how that started. So,
yeah, I think that I got inspired to play bass because of
Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not because of Mark. What's his name? not because of Twisted Sister's bass player.
No. All due respect to him.
Yes. Fine fellow. Yeah, and I think the live shows didn't necessarily, because I already wanted to play guitar, because like we talked about it in an earlier episode, I was already way into Ace Frehley.
Mm-hmm.
AC/DC was my favorite band, and so I was just obsessed with Angus, you know. So I was always focused on the guitar. I think secretly I wanted to be a singer, like when I fantasized about playing rock. I always saw myself as being able to sing like Bruce Dickinson or whatever, but the reality was I knew that wasn't going to happen. But for some reason, maybe because I'd tried to sing along with records and I knew I couldn't do it, but I hadn't tried to play guitar, so that wasn't out of the question yet.
Uh-huh.
I was like, maybe if I get a guitar, I'll be able to play it, you know? So that's kind of where that started. Wanting to be in a band. So I think even though we still weren't hanging out, you and I, necessarily at that point, our thoughts were sort of going in the same direction, which is kind of cool since we ended up.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. We ended up in a band together. And then, I think so. That was New Year's 86. So it was really quick after that that Dan and I got our first guitars and started figuring out what this thing was all about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long after Maiden was it before you.
Oh, it probably wasn't until, gosh, was it the summer of 85 maybe?
Okay. So like a year and a half, something, or a half year?
No, actually, no. Yeah, because it'd be 85 because that was the next year.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, about that crappy bass.
Yeah. So you might have been ahead of me there too. You might have had your bass before we had our guitars. I'm not sure.
Because I know I was in that amazing band.
Yes. Wait, don't tell me. Altered States.
Yeah.
Or Hellrats.
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 Would have been better.
Well, it was more than we had. And I'm going to tell the story of Dan and I's first. Dan and I, my and Dan, our first attempt, but not in this episode, because it didn't even have guitars. It was very odd.
Oh well, yes,
but we recorded we recorded songs of a sort, but that is for another day. So, anything else?
Well, all right. Hey, thanks for thanks for listening to the fourth episode.
Yes, and we'll get back to the preliminary stages of when we started our first band.
Yes.
Probably in the next episode and meander around some more. And
maybe Scott will talk about that first band that he and Dan were in.
I'll try to mention it. Don't look for it. It's not there anymore. But yeah, so thanks for hanging around. And catch episode 5. And as always, subscribe, leave comments, do all those things.
Yes, do all that stuff you're supposed to do.
Yes, and listen to a Twisted Sister record. Preferably one of the first two.
Try and find some TKO.
Yes. They're on Bandcamp. Yes. That's where I got one. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.